including people such as myself. So if you have any questions about what I'm about to go through, please feel free to stop me, because what I'm about to cover is essentially just some very elementary stuff. And if you like, it's just going to be an exercise in having fun with Einstein's equations. Degravitation was proposed in this paper in 2002 by Okani Hamed, Diwali, Dimopoulos, and Gabaradze as a phenomenological, sort of qualitative proposal to solve the cosmological constant problem directly. And by directly, I mean directly, not by paraphrasing it away, by saying that, well, the cosmological constant is what it is because we live possibly in a large number of possible vacua, of which this just happens to be the one that has us in it. That's not something that I'm going to address today, but I'd just like to point out that this is something that you would like to do from the perspective of actually making sure that, you know, these vast vacuum energies that you do expect to get from quantum field theories, whether or not it corresponds to a sensible description of what physics is all the way up to the Planck scale or not, it certainly does appear to be there. Vacuum energies certainly appear to have some manifest physics associated with them, as we all know from the Casimir effect. And so why they don't gravitate as much as we think they should is a very important question to answer. And more annoyingly, from a theorist perspective, is not so much the question as to why the cosmological constant isn't there. It's actually why the cosmological constant is there, but it's such a tiny number. It appears to be incredibly unnatural to explain from any framework that we've come up with so far. So this motivated these authors to propose the mechanism that they did, which is, to paraphrase the question, as why the cosmological constant doesn't gravitate as much as it should. And so the idea was to make G Newton to be a scale-dependent coupling, okay, such that at large enough wavelengths, wavelengths of sources that would tend to source gravity, at large enough wavelengths, G Newton goes to zero. And for small enough wavelengths, G Newton goes to the value that we think it is today, 1 over m Planck squared. And so this scale-dependent coupling, i.e. IR decoupling of gravity, might seem kind of odd in the context of gravity, but perhaps doesn't have so strange, perhaps isn't so completely unprecedented in physics, because there is an analog in electromagnetism, as was pointed out by these authors, first paper, which is, if we look at any electromagnetic source in a linear dielectric medium, okay, we know that Maxwell's equations, rather, get modified from their form in vacuo to their form in media, where effectively the electromagnetic coupling gets modified as if the linear dielectric medium was the only effect were to modify the electrical charge that we appear to be observing. So if we could engineer this permittivity constant to be such that it blows up towards infinity for sources of very large wavelengths, we effectively de-electrify the source. And so this is the same physics as a high-pass filter. And the idea is to affect this in gravity. So anything that would couple to how much a source anything that would couple to a wavelength of a source, or how a source varies spatiotemporally, has to be constructed out of something that observes how much it changes. So the most natural thing to look at would be to promote G Newton to an operator-dependent function of the covariant D'Alembertian. We'd like to make it an operator-dependent function of the covariant D'Alembertian because we would still like to preserve general covariance. And in order to make the dimensions work out, we have to suppress this operator at each power with powers of some IR cutoff.
think they always have two parameters to solve the cosmological. One is to have the cosmological constant be as small as it is to the value of its longer today. The other one is that it's become important on how the scale, right? So now in these theories, there's one of them I assume comes from this scale, the L that you put in your theory.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Other one is by the form of the function.
Yeah. Okay. So over here, maybe I didn't elaborate that one. So this does depend on two numbers. This lambda and L. Lambda is a characteristic wavelength of some source, okay, and L is this characteristic wavelength for this phenomenon to kick in. So typically, if you don't want to mess up gravity at any scale that you've observed today, except for the cosmological constant, you want this length scale L to be extremely large. Okay, so typically, you want to be much, much bigger than the present day horizon scale. So it doesn't mess up anything that we've observed so far, including what we see in the CMB. Okay? So ordinarily, you think, well, then what the hell am I here talking about the cosmology of the gravitation for? Well, the answer is that even if you engineer things this way, there are still some things that you could feel in terms of its effect on what we observe today, on top of just degravitating cosmological constants.
So if you can move those lights so that you have more space, if you move them out to the side, then it doesn't have as much glare.
If you move
those lights that are on your, the lights right there,
this one makes it zero.
Sorry, you just seem to be battling with glare.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So wait, I didn't understand the answer to Yuval's question.
She was asking me. I believe she was asking me Rishi is quizzing me on the relative importance of the two length scales.
Do you think the cosmological constant is small, but why is it just also equal to matter density today? How does the coincidence model solve at the same time?
That's jumping ahead a little bit in terms of what I'm about to cover. Degravitation is engineered to make the cosmological constant not gravitate as much as it does. In fact, it very often kills it completely without some other form of fine-tuning. What I'm about to show you is that even if you arrange for it to kill what looks like a spatial zero mode completely, degravitation, because it's constructed out of functions of this box, very often is a non-local operation. And what it does is it sort of inherits a memory of all the previous energy densities that we've had leading up till this epoch, such that you might conceivably hope to get the right numbers today, even though what looks like a spatial zero mode, spatial temporal zero mode, is completely killed. Okay. So, the very notion that if you act on a constant function with box, it gets annihilated, is essentially the same spirit as what degravitation is hoping to do. So you might think, well, then you completely kill the cosmological constant. You're still out of the problem of how do you explain the fact that it's what we measure today. And as I'd like to show, as I hope to show in the remainder of my talk, that it's a little bit more subtle than that, and that degravitation could conceivably explain today's observed small value. As for the coincidence problem, I have not thought. Grab a glass of water. So the idea is that any sort of operator that you construct out of functions of the covariant d'Alembertian being a self-adjoint differential operator, has a complete set of mode functions in any space-time. So in particular, we could expand any source that we have in terms of these particular mode functions. So if we have an operator, if we have a gene unit that's constructed out of box somehow, And we can expand any source in terms of these mode functions. Essentially, all we have to do is substitute if we imagine it's acting purely on a mode function of, with a given eigenvalue, which I suggestively label lambda inverse squared. If we act on that mode function with this operator valued function, we just simply bring in the eigenvalue where we once had box. So the idea is, let's, okay, so for example, in Minkowski space, which isn't very interesting as far as we're concerned, but it's serves a certain illustrative purpose. We know that plane waves are a complete set of eigenvectors of the D'Alembertian, and the eigenvalues are minus k squared, which corresponds to lambda inverse squared. So the idea is, if we can arrange a function g such that it vanishes for alpha for its argument being much less than 1, which would correspond to extremely large wavelengths in this example, then we've affected what we believe as degravitation. And if we could also arrange for this function to tend to its value that we observe today as g Newton for all sources much less than that wavelength, then we have a candidate filter function for degravitation to be affected. So in particular, anything that looks like the cosmological constant, which has eigenvalue 0 under, so it's a space-time 0 mode, box acting on a space-time 0 mode is 0, will have a scale-dependent g Newton, which is 0. So if we try to couple that to gravity, gravity won't see it. So it turns out, well, in fact, I mean, it's a trivial observation from here to note that it's more than just the cosmological constant that gets degravitated in this case. Any source in the null space of box will also be degravitated. So a novel solution to Einstein's equations in this context would be a single plane wave in Minkowski space would also be a solution to vacuum, to Einstein's vacuum equations, but not a decoherent superposition of such waves, i.e. a radiation gas. So it appears as if Friedman, Robertson, Walker cosmology is more or less going to happen the way it did, but there is a possibility of obtaining novel solutions, which I will return to further on. So very recently, I believe earlier this year, Gia, Justin, and Stefan Hoffmann proposed a concrete model of degravitation where, through exploiting the properties of so-called resonance gravitons, you can obtain a degravitation filter function that looks like the following form, where this exponent alpha varies from 0 to 1. And when alpha is 0, this corresponds to the theory of massive gravity. And when alpha equals a half, I believe this degravitation function comes out of certain DGP models. So the first thing to wonder about aloud is, what about inflation? So one of the sort of main concerns that you might have had initially of any solution to the cosmological constant problem that, like I said, doesn't paraphrase it away. If you're actually trying to make the cosmological constant vanish or not gravitate a lot, you really better be sure that you leave inflation alone. Because what is inflation? Inflation more or less looks like the spatial zero mode of some sort of potential energy. So it turns out that degravitation, in fact, does leave inflation alone in a very nice way. However, it does have some consequences in that it appears to make hybrid inflation not work, precisely because of its reliance on the spatiotemporal zero mode of the potential. It's a question that one might have. Another question one might have is, that are there any possible other observational consequences, for example, in the CMB? And it will turn out that the answer is more or less in the negative for that. But another question one might have is there any extra wanted or unwanted baggage coming from degravitation? So one of the things that I just alluded to is the fact that you might have novel solutions to Einstein equations, and we better make sure that, well, it's just a window of opportunity or possibly a threat to this mechanism. So I'll be discussing some of that. And the final question one might have is, well, if it completely degravitates to cosmological constant, how on earth do we explain its smallness? And moreover, does that introduce another set of tunings? And I hope to show you by the end of this talk that degravitation might have something very interesting to say about that. Sure.
So without a nonlinear theory, how could you do any cosmology with degravitation? I mean, you need a nonlinear theory because Friedmann equation is a nonlinear equation. So,
yeah. So
how can you do cosmology without knowing the nonlinear theory of gravity in this picture?
Oh, I'm not sure why you're asking me this. I'm not considering linear or nonlinear. I'm actually going to solve Einstein's equation with a fully gravitational filter. When it's all its nonlinearity.
It's all nonlinear. Yeah. Okay, because I guess just during the last talk, Justin was saying that you cannot, the nonlinear theory is seeking something. Okay, so
I'm taking this from a phenomenological approach.
Okay.
If you give me a set of equations that look like G mu nu is equal to some function of Boson, G mu nu, okay, what do you get? Okay, does it have anything interesting for cosmology? Conversely, does it have anything to inform people's searches for a phenomenological underlying model that gives you this type of theory? And my answer will be in the infirmary. I think I can actually say a lot in terms of what you should be looking for in terms of underlying theory that gives you this. In particular, I believe I can rule out, suggestively, I think that I can suggest that all models except for those corresponding to alpha equals to zero, i.e. the massive graviton, appear to have more or less a very sensible cosmology. So.
Another way of looking at this is that if you calculate final graphs, gravitons, drop to mass, to one another, what you do is you bring in a form factor, the vertices. Because instead of having your root g, these vertices, you have a form factor. This is the coordinate plot. The form factor is damping out the vacuum position, which is producing the
in a scale-dependent way. Yeah.
So when you do that, you run into a problem with the equivalences. You sound strange, but when you look at the atomic physics, with the binding energy of hydrogen, you really get into trouble with the numbers.
No, absolutely. And the whole point is you want to violate the equivalence principle. At a scale that is much larger than the horizon scale, you want the cosmological constant problem to go away. You want the cosmological constant not to gravitate.
Yeah, but again, I think you're thinking of UV.
Right? Yeah, this
you're
is
thinking you're thinking of your form factors that cut things up in the UV.
Yeah,
this is cutting up in the
red cut up.
I mean, and to answer your question, yes, we are going to buy the equivalence principle in IR. This is precisely the workhorse of it.
Well, you're going to do it either way. So you put in, if Einstein gravity doesn't like form factors in the graviton matrices. Anyway.
I think she's gone. Can I ask a question about that form, about the gene? So how natural is that? Is that just a prescription for doing this, or is it a natural expectation for that cutoff? So the cutoff.
The graviton mass.
Gn over 1 plus m squared over
1. Yes. So how natural is this m squared? So m squared being the graviton mass, you're saying how natural is this for this to be at a scale that makes everything appear to be?
No, I'm just saying how natural, you know, that's one way to parameterize, that's some function of box that mm-hmm. you want.
Mm-hmm.
But I could imagine an infinite different functional.
Sure, okay.
So is this motivated by something?
This is certainly motivated, okay. Yeah. And Justin can motivate it, if you ask him. So this does come from certain models of linear as massive gravity. Okay. So the idea is when alpha is equal to zero, this corresponds to massive gravity, and this does come out of DGP models when alpha is equal to half, right? From studying the graviton property.
But when alpha is 0.3, what is
it? I don't know that.
Is it
so the only sorry if I keep jumping in, but the only known example is DGP.
which is exactly a half. And then you can look at generalizations of EGP, which give you something, a much more complicated function there, but says that in the infrared, which is what he cares about for his story, and it tends to alpha those two zero. So it's a parameterization, if you like, that's valid for far infrared. It's a simple one.
Okay.
Okay, but that functional form, so you shouldn't trust that functional form as being anything fundamental, but it's a good way to explore parameter space, not much. Okay.
But the functional form, 8 pi gn over 1 minus m squared over box, that comes from massive gravity. There's no messing around with that, right? There's no tuning in that.
Yeah, so but in these rainbow models, you get much more complicated.
Sure. But imagine just a theory, no brain wall construction, nothing. You're just in R4, and you have a massive graviton. The idea is
by definition, it's alpha equals zero.
Okay.
Remind me, mu is the Hubble's on the order of the Hubble's.
This m squared, the mass of the graviton, will give you a confident wavelength that you would like to be much larger than the present Hubble scale. Much larger, okay. Because otherwise you're already going to run into violations of what you observed today. You don't want the graviton to acquire a mass of the order of the Hubble scale, because this will already have been observed in the CMB, I'm presuming. I mean, equivalently, there are some very severe constraints on. I'm not sure how. There are very severe constraints on GU very large scale. I don't know how this ties into the mass of the graviton.
So that I think that's similar to this, except for that mass is not a fixed value. So that's what I did with some other people. But so there m is the Hubble constant, and that's a different theory.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just wondering if the two very cool things.
They are not the same.
Yeah, and if it were Hubble today, it wouldn't mess up the scene.
Too late.
Well, it would imply that, well, for one thing, it would imply that there are no multipoles. They would be exactly zero. Any
No, that'd be fine. It'd screw up the ISW, though.
What's that?
It would screw up the late ISW. Which we don't see anyway on this really big scale.
Right.
So maybe that's a feature.
So for the rest of the talk, I'm going to, in the spirit of taking this phenomenological model of modifying gravity in IR seriously, I'm just going to go through what exactly it is, what it does, and what it does to Einstein's equations. And then I'm going to explore various interesting applications, such as inflation and quintessence, and obviously the cosmological quantum itself, and show you some very interesting results, namely that inflation more or less is preserved most tested anyway, and that the cosmological constant is completely gravitated, but that one still sort of feels an afterglow of the cosmological constant in this sort of model. So even if we live in a universe where, forget the cosmological constant problem, forget inflation, if we lived in a universe where the energy density was sort of varying as a function of time, and if today it was exactly zero, having a filter function of the form that I just threw up would make it such that you still observe, if you like, a remnant afterglow of what you went through before. And in fact, if you throw in the numbers, it turns out that it's actually quite a strong afterglow. So it's something to worry about. And another thing that I'm going to look at is in the parameter space, which I had just thrown up before, which is having filter functions where this alpha can range from 0 to 1, there's a very basic reason why I would expect alpha equals 0 to be favored, and that comes from essentially just looking at the stability of any solutions you have in the IR.
And lastly, I'm just going to skirt on the issue of obtaining novel solutions because to novel solutions to Einstein's equations, because if you can possibly degravitate something other than the cosmological constant, in particular, if you can degravitate sources of non-zero energy density, we have novel possibilities for obtaining things such as loitering, which is of interest to some people. So we begin by just considering what the Einstein's equations would look at this level. Whether this comes from an action or not is an open issue. And I believe that there are pretty strong reasons to believe that, to see that it might not ever come from an action, at least most forms of the degravitation filter anyway. But if we just nevertheless take this as a given, if somebody just were to throw you this, possibly it's just some effective description of some UV physics that come from somewhere else, where can we go with this? Well, the first thing to notice is that because the covariant D'Alembertian and a covariant derivative operation do not commute, we're more often going to get new constraints, precisely because this is a tensor that's conserved. And if this is a tensor that's typically conserved, then we're either going to get new constraints or inconsistencies. So the first thing to note is that the matter sector of our equations of motion more or less remain unchanged, okay, except for the fact that the D'Alembertian operator, so the coupling, so minimally coupling matter to gravity makes things look like this. The only effect of degravitation would be to essentially put the metric on which the D'Alembertian depends on to come from having solved this equation, okay? So as far as the form of the equations of motion for the matter sector are concerned, nothing is different. We have to worry more about what happens on the gravity side, which of course depends on the matter sector, but formally at the matter sector, things are more or less the same. So if we looked at what box, if we just look at one power of box acting on the energy momentum tensor is, as a tensor equation, we get the following components for its 0, 0, and its II components. And if we just symbolically denoted, the components of box T mu to be the following, and if we refer to what we had previously as the components of that same tensor, we realize that if we satisfy an equation of state, if our matter sector satisfies an equation of state, which is the following. So recalling that the formal structure of our matter Lagrangian doesn't seem to care about degravitation. So if we have a radiation gas, it still looks like matter that has this equation of state. If it looks like a cosmological constant, it'll still have the equation of state that it normally does. If our matter has that particular equation of state, then the components of box T mu looks like the following. And so in particular, the components of box T mu will satisfy the same equation of state for these particular values of W, for W equals minus 1, a third, and if H squared is equal to 0. It's just a formal thing to notice from just having written this down. And so if we iterate the following prescription by induction, we can see that if this equation of state is satisfied by our matter sector, once we fully apply the degravitation filter on our energy momentum tensor, that same equation of state will be satisfied. So what does that do for us is that it tells us that we still have the same scaling of matter on the expansion of space-time. Simply because if we were to just look at the continuity equation and we realize that the fully degravitated matter content satisfy the same equation of state, we can integrate that right away. And functionally, we get similar equations as Friedman-Robertson-Walker evolution. But now the scales have been altered because of degravitation.
Specific W, is that only the case?
Or yeah, it's only for specific W.
Okay.
Only for W is equal to minus 1, 1 third, and then the calcium space. So for any other value of the equation of state, you are not going to be able to do this analysis. So I'm only setting this up because I just want to show you that I'm going to be consistent in applying this formalism to things like inflation. Okay, so in particular for W is equal to minus 1. Einstein equations are complicated enough. I'm going to make them even more complicated. And I'm going to try and solve an interesting study. And I'm showing you that for W equals to 1, everything still looks consistent.
So when you use the Bianchi cages, you get two terms for the right-hand side. What happens to the T mu G L squared box T mu U? So,
So this is this is covariantly conserved tensor. I'm going to apply the covariant over to this operator, to this tensor that's ordered. The components of this full operator are denoted as with these subscripts.
So you don't conserve any
No, you do conserve.
Conventional.
Well, you have probably the same conservation equation as you do in a degravitated space time. So if W satisfies the equation, so if W is equal to minus 1, 1 third, or 0, the effect of degravitation on the energy momentum tensor is such that the equation state is preserved. And that's the only input that goes into solving the continuity equation, such that you get the scaling of matter on the metric. That's all I've used there.
Sorry, did you say something works when h is 0?
No. And if h is equal to 0,
yeah.
If w is equal to minus 1, and if w is equal to 1 third.
But h still has to be 0 with those. I'm misunderstanding the way you're saying it.
There's three places where it works.
Yeah. It obviously works when h is 0.
Yeah.
Right. So there are two other cases, and those are the ones you said.
Yeah.
Right? Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely.
So could you train my intuition here and tell me what is going on with W of 0? So if I have a bunch of massive rocks.
Okay, so W is equal to 0, it doesn't.
They're totally not interacting.
If W is equal to 0, then the action of Bosch and T mu nu changes the equation of state of the resulting object. So
the equation of state meaning what? So I have two rocks that don't interact.
If you have rocks that don't interact, that has the equation of state W is equal to 0.
Right.
Okay. Now, if you construct the dust energy momentum tensor, then you apply the covariant bound direction onto this energy momentum tensor. The resulting tensor will have a bunch of components that don't satisfy W is equal to 0. Okay. Because.
So pressure isn't what I think it is.
Because. Just look at this bottom line here. This is just what you get if you were to apply Bosch onto T mu nu. And to look at its component. It's still a second rank tensor. Applying the down version onto a second rank tensor gives you back a second rank tensor. So let's look at its components. Bosch of T mu nu has the following components. If T mu nu has the components rho minus T minus T. Okay? So to answer your question, if you apply Bosch onto a bunch of rocks, you get a non-zero pressure for Bosch acting on T mu nu. I'm not saying that. I don't need to be saying anything other than I'm trying to solve a bunch of complicated equations. I'm going to work in a regime where everything is easy. And in particular, the regime in which I'm more interested in, which is looking at an inflationary universe, the equations formally look the same. That's all I was going
for. But it would mean that my rocks have some kind of effective interaction.
No, it doesn't. It's, the physics of what happens with the rocks is only captured by the steam unit. Okay. By acting on the box, you're doing something strange. It may or may not be useful. But what this is effectively what degravitation does. Okay. It acts on steam unit with a whole bunch of so as far as here, if Einstein's equation of G mu nu is equal to box T mu rather than T mu nu, then you're right, then it would look like if you were to interpret what geometry is being sorted by what geometry is doing with respect to matter. That would look like something odd.
Well, are you saying that P in the T mu nu equation is 0 still?
It's not,
right?
Yeah, I mean, so that's what it is. It's something else. So if you set P equal to 0, the TII is not 0.
The box TRI is not zero. It's.
So then, what is W then?
If W is equal, okay, so a main argument is that the what happens in the matter sector is more or less doesn't care about degravitation, right? I mean, your matter Lagrangian is just your matter Lagrangian. It has a square minus g tucked in going along for the ride. That gets sourced by degravitation, but your matter physics is still the same, okay? So if you have, let's say, a bath of photons, it satisfies an equation of state W is equal to 1/3.
So T mu nu is not what it is?
No, T mu nu is what it is. That's the whole point. T mu nu is only what it is because the matter sector doesn't care about degravitation. Right, the internal dynamics of the matter sector don't care about degravitation.
Okay, so for W of 0, that T mu nu is P 0, 0, 0.
Exactly. Rho 0, 0, 0.
Yeah, rho 0, 0. Okay.
Yeah.
And then the universe is expanded by some amount?
But the metric has changed?
Whatever the pressure is, it's still true that rho redshifts in the usual way, right?
No.
Because unless you're saying, because the fact that the divergence of T mu nu is zero follows from the diffeomorphism invariance of the matter action. So if you're saying your theory follows from a diff invariance theory, your equation, then...
Okay, so what you're saying is that... matter itself redshifts as it does. That I agree with completely. Right, but what we're coupling gravity to is matter acting on that degravitation filter.
So I agree, but I think these puzzles making, I don't know if I'm saying anything useful, but these puzzles we're struggling with is the statement that in fact your Bianchi identity is now violated when
it's not
set for these special cases.
I'm not saying that it's violated, I'm saying you get your constraints.
Yeah, the constraint being the equation of state has to take these particular values for the equation to be self-consistent.
It's
not that dust behaves in a very funny way. Dust behaves in a very usual way. It's just for you to trust your equation, it's only valid for these equations of state. That's how I would interpret what you said.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm getting a bunch of questions surrounding what is box T mu nu. For instance, and I'm saying, well, this is not what T mu nu is. T mu nu is T mu nu. That's fine. It's just if you're going to couple gravity to something that looks like a whole complicated function of box on T mu nu, that's what sources gravity. And I'm just
So is the evolution equation of rho changed or not? Like how rho scales with
no,
it doesn't change.
Rho no, but the and the claim is that the evolution equation for the fully degravitated rho also doesn't change. It's not like the same evolution equation for these equation state parameters.
But in general, that's not the case. So
it's not the case.
So generally, you have a problem, right? So generally,
you could have that problem. I'm not saying you do.
So this theory is a little bit wonky for a box of rocks. Is that?
It's
the box
rocks.
It's the same theory.
Yes.
It's the box
rocks. I'm not about to say it. You said it'd be more work. I just haven't done it.
Oh.
That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the case is the words again. You just tell me again.
It's not that it doesn't work. I'm trying to solve a very complicated set of equations. That's all I'm trying to do. And I'm working on three regimes.
And you've made some approximations that only work in these W's? Yes? Yeah.
Okay, let me spell this out very quickly.
Can you put your next slide up, like the one that you had after this?
What's that?
I think you just don't have consistency.
There's another slide after this that
maybe these happen to work because they make magic cancellations.
So,
and the rest of this exercise is interesting.
These are Einstein's equations. Okay, this is what we know and love how to solve. Okay, this is Einstein's equation. This, if you like, follows from the covariant conservation of the Einstein tensor, but it also follows from the equation of motion from your matter sector. Okay,
this won't change under the effects of degravitation. Okay, this will always be true. What if I were to operate on T mu nu now with this complicated filter function, which is what I'm interested in doing in degravitation? Okay, in this case, I have to make sure that this quantity now is covariantly conserved. Okay. All I've shown in this slide is that this is trivially satisfied for these three situations. If you have a box of rocks, you can do more work. That's all I'm trying to say. Yeah.
That's the Bianchi
identity. Right. So, I mean, if you get those cases, the case on the third is because just by conformal invariance, trace T is zero, you can plan
that's my solution.
That just works.
Yeah, and for the case,
minus one is constant, and so by the argument, yeah. Box acting on G is zero.
Yeah, exactly. Now I forgot where I was. Okay. So the end point of all of that was that in the three situations that I threw up, things are just relatively simple. I'm not saying that degravitation is completely inconsistent for a box of rocks and the like. It's just that I'm going to work in several very simple settings. And in these particular settings, I don't have to worry about satisfying Bianchi. Everything I'm doing is consistent, self-consistent. So the first port of call will be to study inflation, okay, where there's only one independent FRW equation to consider, and that's the 0-0 equation. So what does acting on rho, which is now going to be given by just the potential energy of some scalar field, acting on that with some degravitation filter, what effect does that have on geometry? So one might be tempted, okay, whenever you see something that looks like 1 over 1 minus an operator, one might be tempted to just go ahead and expand that operator in terms of its Taylor series, and then act on it, and then expand this rho in terms of the mode functions of what that operator would be. So if we were to mode expand whatever source we have here, if it's spatially homogeneous, which is what we expect in cosmology, we could cheat and use plane waves in De Sitter space, even though they're not technically eigenfunctions or eigenvalues, simply because box acting on either I omega t gives you this quantity, which is complex in general. But if we were to mode expand, if we were to then try and expand this filter function in terms of powers of m squared over box, okay, we first thing we notice is that we have two regimes of validity, okay? And that simply comes down to the fact that whenever you try to expand 1 over 1 minus box, 1 over 1 minus x, okay, we'd better make sure that x is less than 1 in order to have a convergent expansion. Okay? And so the question then becomes, the action of this now depends on the wavelength of the source that we have. So if the source is such that its inverse wavelength is much greater than the inverse wavelength of the graviton, or if its k squared is much greater than the m squared, we can go ahead and expand as follows, because this quantity will always be less than 1. However, if this isn't satisfied, we had better perform the inverse expansion, which the net effect of that is to only make the sum go from 1 rather than 0. It's just basic Taylor expansion. So it turns out then that sources with wavelengths lambda much greater than the Compton wavelength of the graviton degravitate, because in that case the leading order term, okay, because in that case we're using the expansion where the sum starts with a 1, the leading order term is going to be of order k squared over m squared. Okay, so that's going to be vanishing. And in the opposite case, when we're dealing with wavelengths much less than the Compton wavelength of the graviton, gravity is more or less unaffected. And okay, perhaps a very direct, that might seem a little abstract, perhaps a very direct demonstration of this is chaotic inflation. Okay? What if we had a potential that looked like this? If we had a constant piece plus some m squared phi squared term, and if our energy density was the following, where we neglect phi dot squared terms because we're in a slow roll regime. In the slow roll regime, it's very easy to show that phi squared itself is an eigenfunction of box, okay, on shell. Okay. So in particular, in this expansion, we can more or less just substitute m squared wherever we see box, or minus 2 m squared rather. So the net effect of the degravitation filter on a slow rolling potential is to just make what looks like 8 pi g newton go over to 8 pi g newton of 1 plus m squared over 2 m squared phi. So if the mass of the inflaton is much greater than the graviton mass, which it almost certainly is going to be, this is something of the order of the gut scale, and this is something of the order of you know, much larger than the Hubble scale, or mass scale that corresponds to that rather, you more or less get left with what you were left with, which is what you expect. However, if the mass of the inflaton were, say, comparable to the graviton mass, you immediately start to see how you get a degravitation sort of starting to creep in. So if in particular, if m squared were much less than, if the m squared of the inflaton was much less than the mass of the graviton, then this goes to zero. So this is how you see how degravitation would like to kill. Oh, and by the way, I completely neglected to show that. The spatial zero mode, of course, is gone. So the potential that I initially threw up had a constant piece just going along for the ride. Typically, we set that equal to zero. But the eigenvalue of lambda under box is zero. And so if you like, that would have corresponded to putting a zero here, which would have made this quantity 1 over that quantity go to zero. So. That's exactly what I was going to say in this slide. So slow roll inflation is more or less completely unaffected, even though the cosmological constant itself has been completely degravitated. So this is something quite promising if you believe in this mechanism. At least it addresses a suspicion that some people might have had, some people including myself, because that's actually how I got interested in figuring out some more of the details of degravitation, was answering that question for myself. Hybrid inflation, however, is completely nullified. In fact, it's just reduced to slow roll inflation. So the dominant thing that makes hybrid inflation what it is rendered irrelevant. And the way to see that is essentially hybrid inflation relies on two fields, one of which is the inflaton, and another field which couples by a sigma squared phi squared term to that field. And that field essentially causes the potential to undergo a first order, what looks like a first order phase transition. But essentially, it's in this phase in which inflation is going on. So as far as the inflaton, as far as the potential is concerned, inflation is affected literally by the constant piece that pops out of this potential, okay, which is killed by degravitation. So degravitation would actually make hybrid inflation not work. And just to sort of bring things home, what if we had something that, you know, in a sort of lazy sort of manner, looks something like quintessence. So if we had a potential energy that was very slowly varying in time, okay, so what that would look like is a constant piece, a zero mode. So this effectively, if we were to throw this in here, would just give you V zero because it's delta function in omega, plus some piece that is slowly varying in time. So this epsilon is a frequency that, if you like, is very, very, very small. If we look at the effect of the degravitation filter on this quintessent potential, if you like, again we see that if this frequency is such that it's slow, but it's still much faster than the frequency associated with the graviton, then quintessence is also more or less unaffected. Things get interesting, however, when we consider something that looked a little bit like old inflation. So this is just, no one really believes old inflation actually happened, but this is an interesting exercise for several reasons, which I'll get to in a little bit. What if we had a potential that just looked like a step? Okay? How does that look that different from a cosmological constant? Can degravitation really tell the difference between something that looks like, really looks like a spatial zero mode, or something that looks like a spatial zero mode except for one point in space-time? If we were to write down what this potential looks like in frequency space, it looks something like this. So V of T formally looks like this, a constant piece plus this multiplied by a step function in time. And if we were to apply the degravitation filter onto this potential, okay, we are basically left with something that looks like a contour integral, which is incredibly easy to evaluate. And we're left with a resulting potential such that if the graviton mass is non-zero, we find that the energy momentum that sources inflation is sensitive to the energy difference between these two energy levels. And things get really interesting when we consider a more realistic, quote unquote, example of a series of cascades through some sort of a potential landscape, if you will. And in this situation, the end result of this calculation is the following, is that at any particular time, if you find yourself sitting on one of these plateaus, okay, the potential you feel is the potential of that plateau plus pieces that are suppressed by m squared over h squared. Okay? So if somehow you were to then imagine yourself to exist in some sort of a landscape where you truly exist in a true vacuum today, so your vacuum energy today is zero, but you had been through a series of cascades from previous vacua, okay? Instead of seeing zero as your cosmological constant today, you actually see what this piece is giving you. And that is the total energy difference that you, if you like, tunnel through, suppressed by m squared over h squared times 8 pi g newton. So if we imagine then this in the context of, let's say, the string landscape, okay, and we were to solve for h squared in this setting, well, first of all, the thing to note is that the remnant h squared that you will still feel an h squared today. It's just like the universe will still feel an effective cosmological constant, even though the actual cosmological constant, if you like, the bare cosmological constant, is zero. If you, even if you find yourself in the true vacuum of your landscape today, you'll still feel a remnant. And typically, that remnant is going to be too large, okay? Because this m over m plus, well, by too large, I should paraphrase that in a second, because the value for the cosmological constant you feel today is this m divided by m Planck, which if we take the graviton mass to be, let's say, the order, if its Compton wavelength is of the order of the Hubble scale today, m divided by m Planck is 10 to the minus 60, which is still 60 orders of magnitude off what we would want to explain the cosmological constant that we observe today. And even if we assume that we tunnel through, let's say, some very low scale inflation, it's still not going to give you enough to give you 10 to the minus 120. But the main point of this is that degravitation carries a memory of where you've been. And it's a rather stark signal. So it appears as if tunneling through the landscape and degravitation are mutually incompatible, according to this toy calculation. But however, an interesting thing to note is, if instead of, you know, forget inflation ever happened. I mean, let's presume that we lived in a universe where there was no such thing. And in fact, let's presume we lived in a universe where there was never any large vacuum energy density. What this is saying is you might possibly still observe something that looks like a cosmological constant today because of the memory that degravitation tends to carry of previous energy densities. And an interesting thing to note is if we could somehow exploit degravitation itself. So if we were to imagine having vacuum dynamics in the context of degravitation, and if you like, in terms of these equations here, if instead of 8 pi g Newton, the operator acting on t mu, we brought it back onto the g mu nu side by acting with the inverse operator, if we could somehow get that to be a source of its own dynamics and possibly create some sort of self-inflation, as Justin had worked in a similar UV modification to gravity, then we get another factor of m over m Planck here appearing over here, and that could possibly give you a number that's of the order of 10 to the minus 120. But that's just delta V is the total potential drop you've experienced throughout that whole cascade. So if you have, let's say, gut scale, series of gut scale equation, this is only a factor of 10 to the minus 6 onto 10 to the minus 6. So you'd have to have very, 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 either you have to tune the graviton mass to be much, well.
You're not going to be gravitational. That's your problem. You have that sequence of steps where you wait to time infinity.
Well, the approximation that goes into this calculation is that all of those steps are such that it's much less than the time scale associated with the graviton. So yes, you have to, so if I were to take that back in, I think I even worked out, if you were to kick that back in, you still have to wait a really long time, much larger than the age of the universe today.
Yeah.
So if instead of tunneling through the landscape, you sort of flow through the landscape, is that zero? Do you end up with zero to accuracy? Or?
What do you mean by flow?
Well, if there was never any step, if it was just this continuous.
Yeah, things become a lot more. Well, in that situation, that calculation isn't valid. Because I honestly can't have, I don't have anything to say in that case. But my suspicion, yeah, I don't know what to say.
Was it generally thought, I mean, the landscape in general, it's, you just tunnel from one spot to another?
No, that's not the, that could happen, but I don't believe that's the way people think about it.
Okay,
no. But it is a possibility. You can come through. You can.
Okay, but then.
No one's invoking that to explain.
So what is this calculation? So these delta V's are.
This is saying if you had a situation where you lived.
Where you go from spot.
Yeah, where you tunnel from one place to another. If you had that situation, you would still see a remnant afterglow of those previous. So. That calculation was, you know, a toy model calculation. In general, you have to take into account spatial homogeneities if you're going to redo that calculation, right? But I think the order of magnitude estimate won't change in that situation. And then one might worry about other possible observational consequences, namely in the CMB. The CMB, of course, being the imprint of fluctuations that are only now re-entering our horizon after being blown out of them by inflation. The answer is pretty firmly.
Didn't alpha come in anywhere in your calculation?
I said alpha is equal to 1.
Okay.
If you said alpha is equal to anything other than 1, the orders of magnitude
don't change. Don't change.
Yeah.
So there's the
unless alpha is greater than 1, okay, which is not a regime where things are under.
I think we're saying
alpha is equal to 0 to lambda. Alpha is equal to 0.
Okay, so alpha.
Sorry.
So you're saying that this not doesn't change if alpha is not is alpha is not 0.
If alpha is anywhere between 0 and 1, the order of magnitude doesn't change. But if alpha is greater than, essentially, because the gravitation filter acquires powers greater than 1, what happens is that in the contour integration, you get multiple roots, and then you could conceivably get more of a suppression, but I don't think that's a regime of much interest. Anyone trying to actually construct models to do that. So when we worry about possible inference on the CNB, the main quantity to be concerned about is delta rho over rho, which seems to be sensitive to the overall energy density that sets inflation. However, in most cases, even in slow roll inflation, the sort of zero of the energy is always taken for granted to be zero, and so that typically won't have too much of an effect. However, in terms of the perturbed Einstein equations, I think it's pretty straightforward to show, just in terms of getting an order of magnitude or sort of divergences that might be present straight. And if we perturb this equation, we now have an extra term to reckon with, which is what you get when you take a perturbation of this quantity. And what we find is that if you worried about that extra term, which is proportional to the derivative of g nu now as a function of this filter function, and you look at its dependence on wavelengths, if x is, if you like, if x is k, some dimensionless variable that corresponds to k, the wave vector number, unless alpha is equal to 0, you see that this will actually blow up towards infinity. Okay, so this is just a very basic way of seeing that this theory might have unstable solutions in the IR unless we stick to the case of the massive graviton. In terms of seeing something in the CMB, though, this really isn't going to have that much of an effect because in the CMB, we're literally looking at fluctuations, and then there's a cutoff on K, which corresponds to roughly a quarter of the present Lorentz scale of which degravitation in which case, x would be much, much larger than 0 in this case. But in terms of just considering the stability of the solution, this is indicated that everything other than a massive graviton might be problematic.
You need the scale, the filtering scale, to be really big for the perturbation calculations for inflation. You have this situation where the right variable is constant outside the horizon. Presumably, that's modified.
Yeah, and say if you set the scale of inflation, so if you set the scale of the graviton to be much greater than the present horizon scale, certainly CMB is not going to see anything.
But I guess I just mean for the perturbation calculation, mm-hmm. you need the scale to be much bigger than all the modes. But yeah.
Okay. So I mean, certainly if it's bigger than the present horizon scale, it's much bigger than the horizon during the epoch and season with regs in the horizon.
Yes.
I mean, it's much bigger than the present horizon scale, which means that in terms of the perturbation calculation, if you like, in this calculation, that would be saying that your IR cutoff on X is going to be like 10 to the 30 or something. So this quantity literally is zero. So in terms of computing things in the CMB, in terms of the primordial spectrum, things don't change that much, but in terms of the stability of your solutions in the IRs at a formal level, this indicates that there might be something odd going on unless alpha is equal to 0. So finally, I'd just like to point out that there is a possibility of obtaining novel solutions. So certainly in the context of doing GR on a conformally flat hyperbolic space-time, not much different is going to happen, but it certainly does allow for the possibility of maybe constructing novel cosmologies in novel settings if we realize the following thing, which is that the null space of the covariant D'Alembertian involves more than just the cosmological constant. In fact, plane waves are also annihilated by box. However, this is almost of only academic interest to us because typically, well, I mean, certainly, gravity is sourced by energy densities, which are typically quadratic in if you like, field quantities. So if even if we had so if we had, let's say for example, a pure plane wave, and we constructed its energy density, then that certainly would be degravitated. So this is already showing you a new solution to Einstein's equations, namely that a plane wave propagating through Minkowski spacetime, no matter how large its amplitude, is still a solution to Einstein's equations. But typically, we're going to have a decoherent superposition of such plane waves, and that typically is not annihilated by Box, essentially, because phases don't really cancel out. But nevertheless, it's still an interesting question to ask, could there be other solutions to Box whatever equals to zero? So is there a non-trivial null space to Box in a given spacetime? If so, what is it? Because if we could find it, and if it's something interesting, it could allow us to construct new loitering cosmologies. Because that's basically saying that whatever non-zero source of energy momentum you have, it more or less looks like the vacuum. So that's just food for thought. And just offer my conclusions here. So the degravitation paradigm was proposed to kill all the zero modes of the D'Alembertian completely. So in particular, the cosmological constant. And although one might have been concerned that it might also screw up inflation, it certainly does not, and very emphatically does not. It you can see very nicely how it preserves slow roll inflation and all of its successes, and old inflation too, if you still wanted to go there. But hybrid inflation appears to be nullified because of its reliance on the space-time zero mode. And the inherent non-locality of degravitation means that degravitation tends to be sensitive or tends to have a memory of previous energy densities in such a way that it renders some sort of an afterglow phenomenon if we had former vacua that looked like they were a cosmological constant or some false vacua of some potential. The effects of that would still be observed today via degravitation. And also that degravitation might also offer us novel possibilities for constructing loitering cosmology. So that's all I have to say.
So I'm just concerned about the whole stability of this in the sense that, so if I understand you right, you're saying that this energy density is there, this huge energy density of 10 to the 60 solar masses per cubic centimeter, if you want to think of it that way. That's how an astronomer thinks it. And it's gravitating. It's just not gravitating on huge scales that would look like the cosmological or something. But if it's gravitating on any scales we care about, if there's any kind of inhomogeneity in the density of that, maybe a gravity wave goes by through empty space or whatever, it just seems like everything's got to collapse.
No. No.
Why is this
maybe you misinterpreted what I said. No, it is a problem. If you have a cosmological, well, so, I mean, this thing was designed to kill the cosmological constant.
Right.
And my result is that it does kill the spatial zero mode, but because of its non-locality, it inherits a memory of previous vacua, so that you reintroduce something. It's 10 to the 60 orders of magnitude too big. So it's that, it's not good.
But even if that worked, wouldn't you still worry about things on, 1 meter scales? That you have this incredible energy density in the room here with us gravitating, and unless everything is perfectly balanced, we're going to have something really bad happen before dinner. I mean, you can't just kill large scales. You have to.
Is that the other way around? It kills everything.
Yeah.
I'm
not sure I understand what you're saying. So the degravitation kills things above a certain IR cutoff, but leaves everything below that cutoff as is.
That's what I'm worried about. It seems like you would want to kill things in the UV and keep all the, kill all scales smaller than a millimeter. Maybe then you just have ADD. But
well,
the ADD, sorry, not ADD.
But then we'll try to tell you. No, well, the problem of the constant is a UV or an IR problem is another debate. But this is saying that as far as gravity is concerned, okay, the cosmological constant problem appears to be an IR problem. Okay. It is asking why something that looks like a spatial-temporal zero mode doesn't gravitate as much as it should. So let's try and kill that and leave everything below a certain extent. Okay. Okay. What you're wondering is,
do fluctuations see this ridiculously large energy density? Right?
Yeah.
So you're saying
that's one thing of it.
That's part of it. Do the fluctuations have any chance of seeing this huge amount of energy density gravitation? And
does it all? I mean, even for a gravitational wave, it all cancels out somehow, so that nothing bad happens.
It's just by construction, right? Because you have a constant and a box operating on a constant. So which gives you zero. So, yeah, I don't know.
Right.
So in this view, that energy isn't gravitational energy. It's not really a real energy in the sense that we usually think of energy as something we interact with. There's no way really to access or interact with the energy that's in this vacuum. So it's in some sense meaningless to think about the vacuum energy in this theory, because by constructing it in this way, you said that sort of energy is just decoupled from us. And if whatever it is or not doesn't matter, because it's just not the sort of thing that we can ever enter through any of our forces.
Okay.
Is that right? Is that fair to say?
So my concern is that this whole thing is, I mean, I guess what John was objecting to is very non-local, right? So when you write everything in time, then your current evolution depends on your entire history from the infinite past to infinite future, because you have to decompose things in Fourier modes in frequencies. And what you want to do is to modify very low frequency modes, basically, how you react to very low frequency modes, which exist in the infinite past and in the infinite future. So it's you maximally break causality in this description, right?
desperate times call for desperate. No, this doesn't work causality in a certain sense that you are only referring to things that come from. I mean, if you like, you know, the fact that we're even here depends on all the history back till.
No, so that's fine, but in the future, I think the thing is that when you do the Fourier decomposition, the frequencies, so these modes are infinite in the past and in the future.
That's just a calculational tool.
But I think what you say is right. But we had this disagreement yesterday that we never resolved. But I think you're right. So the point is that if this filter is causal, which it is in some sense, then to know for gravity to know whether a source is really constant, whether it's really zero frequency or actually going to change, like in you have to wait time scale of the order of the filter. The filter cannot know instantaneously what's going to happen in the future. So the scale in the filter is Hubble today. So it takes Hubble today for before the gravitation kicks in. That's how
you were saying this is a Kasov theory, even the nonlinear version of it? Or?
Yeah, that's right. It's still Kasov. Yeah. But you have to wait a long time for the CC to be gravitated.
I don't see why it is causal, because you have it's not local, definitely, right?
Yeah, definitely not local.
Well, it depends what you mean by non-local. Maybe we can discuss it over dinner.
Okay.
For example, during inflation, the Hubble scale is so much smaller. How does it see that the math?
That's right. So it inflates as usual, like you were saying. It doesn't.
But it does see it like that. I mean, how does it, if you have a very flat potential, which is like, but it has to, I mean, if it was the sitter, but it, or it was the pi square potential, but very flat, you said it can't distinguish between these two, right?
Yeah, it leaves inflation alone.
Yeah.
provided the time scale of inflation is much, much less than the degravitation time.
I think hybrid inflation also could survive because of the same argument, because the time scale is much shorter than the gravitation time scale. Right?
I guess if you were to... Okay, so I guess what I was referring to is sort of like an idealized, you know,
because
version of hybrid inflation where you start out, where the universe starts out basically resting on the zero mode of some potential and then drops off.
But yes,
but if you were just
it does drop off.
We see something, yeah.
So since it's not a real constant, it does change at some point, at the end of inflation.
Sure.
Then you could see it in principle, but
maybe we should get it. Thanks for